Good morning, this 220 day of 2020. My name is Michael McCusker. This past Monday was, if you hadn't noticed, President's Day. All 45 of them bumped together, the good, the bad, and the mediocre, which distilled to a common mush could also be known as Millard Fillmore Day. And Saturday, February 22nd, is the organic natal day of America's father of our country, George Washington, born in 1732. He died in 1799. American history starkly encapsulated. From the first president, who is reputed to have never told a lie, to the current president, whose every sordid breath is a lie. If only the sainted George were able to slay the evil dragon Trump, chop down a cherry tree onto his vile Sasquatchian skull before he maliciously deconstitutionalizes the nation into the benighted states of dystopia. I start today's program with a screed I wrote in Hope 4 years ago in 2016, but now reiterate with minimal editing in response to Trump's vicious despotism. And in realization, these possibilities might sound insipid in this dark and dismal era, yet are more than ever urgently necessary. I call it reinventing democracy. And as I said, I'm at fault for it because I wrote it. Let us now praise a famous election nearly a year before it occurs. This November 2020 national election is already one for the history books. The country is rapidly retrogressing from a diversely construed democracy primarily based on the rule of common people, always more in principle than reality, to an aristocratocracy of billionaires and immense multinational corporations that saturate elections with undisclosed mega billions of anonymous campaign donations and quite possibly manipulate electronic voting machines. The USA is at a crossroads as severe and consequential as the Civil War, a crisis of liberty, power, and wealth that will determine our future as a nation and society, either as a corporate plutocracy administered by corrupt and questionably elected figureheads with a dictator at the top, or an open society as envisioned in its most fundamental beliefs and laws, and perhaps also as a leading member of a world confederacy of presumably eventual democracies. Civil liberties are dramatically jeopardized while average American citizens are rendered politically impotent. Most citizens and their communities have been undeservedly ravaged by economic disaster and are affected daily by the consequences. Millions of jobs liquidated, equal numbers of homes foreclosed, while necessary social services are purged because public taxpayer money is diverted towards egregious wars and bailouts of perpetrators of the financial catastrophe. The only real distinction of this country is not wealth or power, but the fact that the great majority of ordinary people who do not have much wealth are the fundamental source of national power. The only way to save democracy is with more democracy, and by keeping a balance between conflicting factions to allow none of them to attain such power as to be capable of suppressing or persecuting the rest. Capitalist democracy is falling apart from its own contradictions. Democracy and capitalism were extolled as the same principle during the Cold War, but since the collapse of communism, the ancient antipathy between social and economic disparities has accelerated, especially following the collapse and bailouts of Wall Street. The only real political parties in the USA are the rich party and the poor party. The New World Order the nation's plutocrats are designing in the name of democracy is a direct schism between the affluent and 99% of everybody else, domestically and globally. Our Constitution contains much of what is needed to repair the crushing inequality that impairs our society, but it tends to be used to protect privilege and power. Historian Vernon Farrington believed American history has been largely a struggle between the spirit of the Declaration of Independence and the spirit of the Constitution, he wrote, and could not understand why intelligent Americans confuse the two and think of them as complementary. Their unlikeness is unmistakable, he wrote in Main Currents of American Thought, the one a classical of humanitarian democracy, the other an organic law designed to protect the minority under Republican rule, quote unquote. If the American Revolution is accepted as more than a revolt of colonial bourgeoisie, and that it gave birth to an egalitarian society in which the common citizenry had a chance to be their own rulers, it should also be realized that every reform to ensure that possibility has been bitterly and often bloodily resisted and only adopted with great reluctance. Reforms that have been ratified are usually countered with vicious backlash and unrelenting reversion. If anyone looks closely enough and connects the dots, they would most likely discover the radical kleptocult of flagrant financial speculation, corruption, and fraud that collapsed the nation's economy and impoverished millions of Americans who were suddenly homeless and jobless. Even more indecently cruel is the fact the venal banksters reaped trillions from the ruinous debacle they avidly originated. With a few rare exceptions, it is astonishing the poor quality of presidential candidates who are filtered through the political process to represent a nation of nearly 400 million citizens, all of whom theoretically have a chance to be president. LaDonna Harris, who was a vice presidential candidate, she ran on a third-party ticket with Barry Commoner, a marvelous name for a candidate, expressed the lack of quality of candidates when she said that American elections are not based on the choice of the lesser of two evils, but instead of the banal evil of two lessers. A famous French diplomat said much the same thing when asked about two contemporaries. "When I think of one, I prefer the other," he replied. Election year entertainment has seldom reached above the belt and never above the neck. Campaign dialogue has from the start been little more than a political fog of asperity, accusation, and muddle. Inflaming passions and prejudices are regarded as essential to gain popular political support, and grim hatreds and intolerances are recklessly incited. Intelligence and reason are normally the first casualties of the electoral process. The current election seems focused on an arbitrary insistence for a war president. Election of a president has always been choosing a possible wartime dictator. The most important role of the presidency is as commander-in-chief, which is decorous in peacetime, but Caesarian in wartime. A newspaper just after 9/11 declared, "In time of war, it's all power to the president." Presidents consolidate their power in wartime, and the impulse is to quell dissent, which is barely tolerated during normal times and quickly repudiated in periods of national crisis when it is especially necessary. Presidents are given great power during crises not covered in the Constitution. Patriotism is the key word in justification for suspension of civil liberties, which points out a flawed weakness of democracy. The tyranny of aroused public opinion, quote unquote, which, if adroitly protracted under the rubric of patriotism, might well lead to broad suppression of civil liberties. A courageous and principled president would resist the war cries of the aroused, extremist, bloodthirsty, and opportunistic, and instead shrewdly deal with probable enemies with a deft hand. Perhaps one of the most popular acts by a new president would be to immediately abolish voter restriction laws and every other attempt to reduce voter eligibility. Voter fraud is a fictitious problem. The real fraud is the specious argument to repress voting, which strikes at the core of democratic human rights and the universal franchise to choose leaders and representatives without censorship. A progressive president would make every effort to put an end to the immense power of the finance industry, which seems to be the only true winner of the world economic collapse it precipitated. That would include reinstating sanctions following the crash of 1929, such as Glass-Steagall, which divorces saving banks from high-risk investment banks, shielding savings accounts from subsidizing volatile gambles. necessary up to the nanosecond regulations must be apt to the ever-twisting nature of financial surrealism. An ethical president would prosecute the persons and financial firms that fostered the collapse, answerable by law and accounting for their avaricious crimes. Not only should they stand trial, their private fortunes must be equally liable so that neither individuals nor institutions profit from illegal financial activities or speculations. No one is above the law, certainly not Wall Street banksters and stock speculators. Punishment is not simply legal revenge, but also prevention. It is necessary to redistribute the purloined wealth of banks and corporations among those whose lives have been crushed by the Great Recession, those who lost their homes, their jobs, their pensions, not to mention the schools and programs helping the destitute that are being ravaged by shrinking budgets, due in substantial part to taxpayer bailouts to the banksters whose obviously unethical avarice caused the financial meltdown. A wise president would end the malign neglect of the huge and growing underclass that lives abandoned and without hope in our crumbling inner cities and impoverished rural areas. Millions of children live in poverty in the USA, most of them not white, which significantly lessens their chances of escaping destitution due to this country's prevailing racism. Adding to their woes is the threat of gentrification, of being forced into homelessness. The late Dr. Charles Wilder, former director of Clatsop County Community Action, once said that the war on poverty has become a war on the poor. A responsible president would counter the rising inequality in the USA by signing an explicit executive order for the reversal of the upward flow of the nation's wealth and instead make the arid trickle-down a flood. The disparities in wealth and living standards undermine democracy and impede civil disorder on a massive scale. A sensible president would impose upon Congress and the Supreme Court to rescind the concept of a corporation as a person, which corporate America has exploited for all the rights of a person in the USA, but none of the obligations or accountability. A resolute president would raise the minimum wage as maximally as possible, but that is hardly enough. The legal framework of the American labor movement needs radical change. Political solutions in which workers' rights and union democracy in its broadest sense are guaranteed is crucial to right the imbalance between wealth and equity. Unions must be revitalized and include women and minorities in leadership positions, and they should be given political and legal protections to enable them to negotiate strong labor contracts with foreign and domestic corporations that operate in this country. Rebirth of a robust labor movement requires the enfranchisement of women and minorities, plus physically and mentally handicapped workers, and should focus on a social crusade framed as an extension of American democracy, in a sense recreating a social justice movement like civil rights in the 1960s. A conscientious president would ensure the separation of church from state. By its own law, the government cannot and should not impose any manner of worship or religion upon its citizens or any others who live in this country. It cannot attempt to regulate or interfere with anyone's choice of worship or wish not to. The current debate about church and state is less about religion than it is a dichotomy of political values between those who would impose a narrow doctrine of absolutes that are not to be questioned or resisted, only obeyed, and those who believe that everyone has the right and freedom to choose their own beliefs. A righteous president would proclaim that the Ten Commandments of American civilization are the Bill of Rights. A far-sighted president would drastically reform the tax system in favor of the taxpayer, first guaranteeing each an accounting for their money used by every level of government, and that basic returns for that money be automatic priorities such as food, shelter, and universal health care. The present system of required payment of taxes without any accountability for their use by government must be reversed, which is possible with computerization of all public agencies. Eventually, it should be possible in such a system that taxpayers have the legal power to determine how and where their tax monies are spent. A judicious president would eliminate corporate and individual tax havens wherever in the world and in whatever form they currently exist. A corollary would be to charge the national debt to financial and corporate conglomerates that not only owe hundreds of billions of dollars in back taxes, but have also received huge refunds for taxes they have never paid. A visionary president would ensure education as a major priority and that public education be upgraded at all levels, and would especially reinstate nationally the former system of California state universities and make college free without tuition, yet scholastically competitive rather than financially as at present. To paraphrase Marx, education ought to be for each according to ability, from all according to need. A clear-headed president would not support and would immediately veto any bill that allowed private or homeschool forms of education to promote racial and gender supremacy, in particular any school that considers itself a training academy for an elite leadership. The prospect of public schools for the poor and private schools tutoring for the rich raises a specter of the ultimate eradication of democracy. An unbiased president would insist that appointees to the Supreme Court are committed to women's free choice, with the caveat of strengthening Roe versus Wade, which is under spurious attack. Men who abdicate their responsibility for birth control believe they have the right to control a woman's options, which has less to do with concern for an unborn fetus and everything with retaining legal and political supremacy over women. There is a name for that: the war on women. A generous president would favor reasonable immigration without discrimination, in particular refugees seeking political freedom or personal safety from reprehensible regimes. This would also entail protection from persecution and exploitation of new refugees and create avenues for citizenship or legal residence for illegals who simply wish better lives for themselves and their families. A conservative president would immediately put into effect rigorous environmental laws to stop global warming and the poisoning and ravaging of Earth. Major polluters would no longer be protected or subsidized. Instead, the subsidies would be used to pay the wages of those who will have to work at reversing the damage. Millions will probably lose their jobs as a consequence, and it will be necessary to retrain them for other work, perhaps cleaning up what they were paid to pollute or ravage, regardless of how modest their contributions to the national global junkyard. Jobs will mean nothing if the air is unfit to breathe and the planet is baked like a pie. In conjunction with what would most likely seem draconian environmental ecological measures, research and development of alternative energy sources should be directly funded. These sources, solar, geothermal, wind, and water, were long stifled, which set back research and development for years, which as a result has contributed to global warming that threatens human existence. Oil company executives have belatedly admitted to knowingly and deceptively accelerating global warming for the past half century, willfully jeopardizing succeeding generations for contemporary profit, and should be criminally prosecuted. A corollary mandate would be to authorize state and local governments the right to dissent to the prospect of liquefied natural gas terminals being sited within their boundaries, and also to coal and oil shipments over rail or water and through their seaports, since these will have immense cultural and environmental impact. This is a question of basic democracy, the right of the public to be significantly involved in critical local decisions. Average Americans are pawns in a ruthless worldwide culture war of resource plunder and profit that pits local communities against global corporate octopi that are implacably indifferent to the concerns of people and places they ravage. Incursion of corporate cash register politics into local communities generally includes such iniquities as secret deals, influence peddling, deceptive treatment of a resident populace, intimidation against public resistance, and the corruption of indigenous Quislings. A providential president would decriminalize illegal drugs, which would significantly dry up the huge profits made by drug lords and curb the massive corruption and violent crime terrorizing this nation and Mexico. The precedent for this belief is the repeal of prohibition. Hypocrisy is the word for the war on drugs, which selectively prohibits the use of some substances and tolerates the use of others that are as or more dangerous to public health, such as alcohol and tobacco, which have killed millions. The entire society is criminalized and corrupted while drugs remain illegal and thus immensely profitable. Public officials and financial institutions are bribed by drug lords while Congress dismantles the rights of those accused of minor drug use, which incites repressive police practices in general while ballooning their budgets. Law enforcement is the other profiteer of illegal drugs and overcrowds prisons with non-criminals, which is also an inducement for privatized prisons that have shown little interest in prisoners' rights or welfare. The supply of dangerous and addictive drugs will be considerably less when there is no longer big money made in the trade. The use of narcotics and other addictives should be treated as a medical problem rather than a criminal act. So far, only 20 states and the District of Columbia have legalized marijuana, which is at least a start of national repeal of unjust drug laws. A fair-minded president would proactively sponsor the abolition of the private prison industry as an intolerably criminal enterprise. A defiantly indignant president would immediately support gun control. Guns escalate crime and violence. Because of guns and depraved guns rights policies, we are an increasingly violent society without much hope for reversal unless we try radical solutions. The delirious old myth that an armed citizenry is a shield against intrusive government does not now nor has ever had a shred of truth or reason about it. Disarmament begins at home. Perhaps both cops and criminals should be disarmed, which remains the covenant in England. A perceptive president would not allow the use of pilotless drones over American cities without a majority vote of the affected populace. For that matter, the process should begin to eliminate their insidious military use as predator drones that have been responsible for thousands of so-called collateral casualties, which can be considered as war crimes in the same manner as poisonous gases. A just president will consolidate all discharges from the armed forces into a single category, in particular eliminating dishonorable, undesirable, and bad conduct discharges, which have ruined the futures of hundreds of thousands of veterans who ran afoul of an authoritarian, anti-democratic system that demands unremitting obedience and strips its enlisted members of their civil liberties. Only for serious crimes committed while in service should a discharge be other than general. Veterans have fought for this single type of discharge for years without success. In regards to civil liberties within the military, the rights of dissenting service people and conscientious resistors within the ranks should be protected, and that such groups as Iraq and Afghan veterans against the war are not to be harassed by either the military or law enforcement officials, nor subjected to unlawful arrest or discrimination. A good president will need all these attributes and considerably more for the multitudes of other problems and issues. Gay marriage in all 50 states, an absolute priority. Ditto with marijuana legalization. Restoring necessary domestic programs that benefit most of the population. Introducing what might be considered a wealth tax and raising consumption taxes. Trimming farm subsidies, in particular those enjoyed by agribusiness. Expanding Obamacare to full universal health care while protecting it from the unrelenting attacks to cripple it. Care and support for AIDS and future epidemic victims. Rebuilding the deteriorating public transportation network and infrastructure with special emphasis on mass transit. Preservation and renewal of wetlands and wildlands. Retaining public support of the arts. Revitalization of a national public service organization for young people that would be a combination of VISTA and the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 1930s. An endless list, never satisfied, always in conflict. The country seems divided as in civil war, yet the millions who are generally left out of the democratic process might really swing the election. Just getting them to vote would be a real revolution. The 2020 election is one of the crucial elections of our history and could very well determine if we continue the experiment of democracy or slip down into something else. If we wish to take hope and some encouragement in the long struggle ahead to right the balance of power and wealth in this country, perhaps it is not too late to agree with James Boyle, who wrote in the New York Times, "One reason we have a democracy is because people make unspeakably stupid decisions without it." And in addendum, despite the fact that the binary political party system seems calculated to disregard the candidacy of women for the presidency and stick with two white males, even now, a century after women's suffrage, a woman elected 46th president of the USA would be exactly the prime antidote to the poisonous pestilence of Donald Trump. Finally, accepting a woman as president is a much better idea than the antiquated assumption that only two white males are the only gender choice, a form of genetic apartheid by a status quo unwilling to see beyond its own shriveled genitals, as exampled by the aboriginal vulgarity of Donald Trump. An excellent reason a woman should be elected president is that women generally represent the most generous and humane prospects of humanity. Women are literally pregnant with our future and provide the true compassion and Gaia wisdom of our species. All issues are women's issues, Geraldine Ferraro once said, and Eleanor Roosevelt. She said women should get into politics and stay in it. And as epilogue, in case you have forgotten or have never heard of the forgettable Millard Fillmore, he was the 13th president of the USA, elevated by the death of Zachary Taylor in 1850 and never elected in his own right. His later unsuccessful attempt for the presidency was essentially supported by only the disreputable Know Nothing Party. Negligible as he was, Millard Fillmore is most noted for his notorious and compromising support of the Fugitive Slave Act, which enforced the return of escaped slaves to their invidious masters. This is Michael McCusker. On today's date, 295 years ago in 1725, a posse of volunteer New Hampshire colonists collected a bounty for 10 Native American scalps, which was the first recorded instance of this savage practice, white men scalping red men and women.